Welcome to Venturi's Voice. Join me as I chat with big thinkers, decision makers, and leaders in the world of tech. If you like the show and would like to hear more from us, give us a follow on your favorite streaming platform. Today we're joined by Vince Gratrick, who is Director of Digital and Technology at Age UK. But it's worth mentioning before we crack onto the conversation that these are the opinions of Vince on a personal capacity and not of Age UK itself. Welcome to the show, Vince. It's good to have you.
Thank you. Thanks,
good to have you join us. So we've got an interesting conversation ahead of us. I was mentioning before that I'm not from a charity background, although I obviously do appreciate charity.
Yes.
So, I mean, charity and business is an interesting topic for me because I don't know a great deal about it, so I can very much be the voice of the listener during this conversation. So, to get us going, get the ball rolling a bit, what's your career history and how did you get to where you are as Director of Digital and Technology today?
To back you up, Ben, it is very interesting sort of topic, and some of the similarities and differences between business and charity is interesting to me still, almost taking a sort of more dispassionate view. So I ended up in the charity sector purely on a serendipitous conversation with a person, having worked for 11 and a half years at a headhunting firm in the city. That had a global presence in Hong Kong, New York, London, and worked with them and set all of their systems up. And I was looking to move out of that, and purely by chance was chatting to a guy who said that he was working at a charity and was I interested in going for the role because he was going to be moving on to a different organization. And it was a complete 180. And it was exactly what I wanted. This was in the late sort of 2009, 2010 period, where obviously the financial markets were in a very different position to where they are now. And I wanted something completely different. I wanted a complete change. I'd grown up with the organization that I'd worked at, and went along to the interview. Sounded really interesting, sounded really different. And by God, it was very different. Yeah,
yeah.
Very different indeed. And then I spent 4 years at that charity, United Response, which is a large learning disability charity. I had no connection for learning disabilities. I had no connection to the charity space at all. But one of the biggest players in the charity market, biggest brands at times, charity called Mencamp. Which a lot more people knew than United Response. And so I thought, well, I'll try my arm at that one, and got that job and actually spent 6 years there. And then because the two charities, United Response and Mencamp, are very similar, and we can sort of explore this, because in the charity space, there's 168,000 charities in the UK. There are even groups within groups and sections within sections of that. So I wanted a change again there, because I'd ploughed that furrow for quite a long time in that learning disability space. So chance came up to join Age UK, which is again a different, very different proposition, very different type of organisation in terms of what it does and how it raises money, what its purpose is to Mencamp. And here I am basically here. And that's been interesting in its own right. So there's some commonalities in charities. Itself, as I say, there's a lot of variety. So interestingly, for Age UK, it raises a large amount of its revenue through retail. So it has a lot of shops, which obviously had an impact with COVID, and also a high proportion of its income through fundraising. Whereas Mencamp raise most of its money through commercial contracts with the government. So only 5% of its income, which was over £200 million a year, was through fundraising activities. So very different commercial models, which has obviously different focus for what technology does in an organisation. And for me, it's really interesting to see how it works and the impact that that has. So long answer to your short question.
No, that's great. That's really interesting. You're mentioning, the work that corporate businesses do with charities, and that's an area that I'd like to ask you a little bit more about. So what kind of areas does that kind of bleed into? Where can we see that in, you know, day-to-day life?
Well, it's an interesting space, I think, also because I think a lot more organizations are taking corporate social responsibility seriously. They're wanting to do more, and the power of corporates is obviously growing, particularly when you look at large tech firms and the influence and power that they have. And also the demographic changes where people, particularly of a younger age, are more interested in the social values as much as the corporate values that come out. And where this is sort of helpful for me, or where I'm quite interested in, is that myself and others in the organizations do things called pro bono, which is where corporates can provide services to charities. And some of the stuff in the past, or some of the programs that are set up, to put it bluntly, I think are a little bit naff. You know, they're going and digging gardens and painting fences and so forth. And an area that I was keen to exploit, which, you know, from the organization that you work at, and the big challenge in tech is skills and resources. You know, it's a real problem, and one of the hardest problems for me and my colleagues in the charity sector is getting and holding on to good talent for people, because whilst it's a tech is our business, it's the people that make it happen. So one of the ways that in particular, from when I was at Mencap, we managed to use the corporate social responsibility with Royal Bank of Canada, is rather than them going and painting the fences, which was on their sort of book of what you could do to help a charity, we managed to get some of the guys there to set up a robot process automation, so RPA. It was just what actually is this? So they helped us create a little demo, the standard sort of the video of somebody doing the work and then a robot doing the same work, and to get the concept across, because this actually came about from a friend of mine who worked for Royal Bank of Canada, an old colleague of mine from years back, that sat having a coffee and me lamenting about this technology that was available, but the lack of investment that the charity could put into, you know, these type of activities, and how we were missing an opportunity, really. So serendipitous conversation with him as well. This is where it's all about the networking side of things. He said, well, let's set you up a demo. We did the demo. Long story short is we eventually kept going with their CSR team and started building up an actual production version of the robot. We roped in Blue Prism, who were looking to grow their CSR capabilities. And between the three of us, we set up a production robot.
Wow.
And for nothing for Mencap. So it didn't cost Mencap anything to set up. And I left that program with the head of shared services, a great guy called Sam Jackson, who works there, productionizing the robot so that they could reduce the amount of repetitive work that was going on in his team, processing a lot of data. But what was interesting is the guys that were at RBC, and this was through their own channels. I mean, these are big corporate channels they have to go through. They were really excited by this, and not in a cheesy kind of way. They really enjoyed it. Mm. One of the guys, Jeff, came along to a presentation I gave to the charity IT leaders to talk about the work we were doing and what RPA was, because, you know, RPA is a really big area for growth, but a lot of charities aren't necessarily investing in it because it felt that bit step too far. Now, corporates are doing it, and their teams that are doing it, these guys started to devote their time to it. Now, in theory, they were supposed to only do 2 days a year for CSR. I can probably say it now, in that personal capacity, they were putting in a lot more hours. We built up actually a really nice team between us to make this happen, between Blue Prism and RBC and Mencap. And it was just everything about it was a really positive outcome for all parties. So they were doing something they really enjoyed. And yeah, they were putting in a lot of their own time as well. But they could see the impact of it. The charity was getting access to some really good technology that will help it out, which ultimately helped the bottom line. And Blue Prism, because they were subsidizing a lot of this, were getting a way to showcase what their technology could do within the market space outside of just the corporates. So for everyone, it was a real win. I mean, it was hard yards to make it happen with all the bureaucracy and the politics, and even getting the language right. Some of the challenges within MainCap of getting the organization to think about how we sold that internally, because the initial fear was that it was taking away people's jobs. It was replacing people. But actually then crafting that language to actually see that, to nick the phrase out of Blue Prism, it was taking the robot out of the human. So some of the repetitive tasks that, interestingly for Sam and his team, that we're doing a lot of this processing of material, is dual keying. It's just taking data from one place to another. So it was he got some of his team to be part of the program. So they were developing the robot as well. So they were really engaged. So you got more engagement, less repetitive work, less data errors, no money spent on it. So it was quicker to do more data processing for less money. Honestly, it was a really enjoyable experience.
To do.
And that's blending. That was blending the corporate and the charity's goals sort of together. And I think in the tech space, and in fact, I was only reading an article in the Gartner that put out last week, that particularly in data and analytics and robotics, you're going to see more of a skills shortage in this sort of space. But what organizations are doing is sharing those resources, or you see more fractional use of those resources. And for charities, one of the biggest constraints is salaries. And interestingly, when I was trying to bring in a head of data at MenCap, because the salary ranges were so high, it caused a lot of friction because it stood out. You know, it stood out that a support worker was earning maybe not even, how would you put it? I'm trying to think about the actual figure. The calculation, probably not even a quarter of what this person would be earning. And in a charity, that really, you'll notice, well, you not necessarily notice, but when you look through charities' accounts and their annual reports, you'll see the number of people paid a certain amount of money above a certain threshold. Because it's such a sensitive subject with the general public, that you can't be seen to be paying high salaries, because the perception is most people's perception of what a charity does is everyone sort of somehow doing it for free, but and it's perverse to be paying somebody to run what is effectively a business role, an IT role, with charity money. But the paradox is you need to have really good people to make the charity efficient to get the most value out of what they're doing.
Yeah.
So you have this challenge in charities that you can't even be seen to be paying top dollar for people. So attracting talent, you can't be doing it on price alone. You have to really get into the soul of an individual and find that way to either tug at their heartstrings that they're doing it for the right purpose, or find them on their career trajectory where they're developing and you're giving them the opportunity to work and get involved in stuff that's really more than just about the salary. So I see there's an opportunity as well for that sort of blending, and a bit like when you if you follow football, you get some of the Premiership teams loaning out their talent to lower league clubs. Saying that it is a lower league, but that opportunity to spend time with charities, and this pro bono work that we did is a really interesting scene that I want to sort of keep exploring when I'm in the charity sector.
Wow, so there's a lot to unpack there. I've written so many notes about what I'm going to ask. I mean, first of all, when I speak to a lot of businesses, particularly in like banking and insurance, They all say now that they see themselves as a tech business that does banking, or a tech business that does insurance, or whatever. I mean, would you say that that's the case now with most charities?
No.
No.
It's a shame. And this is one of the differences within the charity sector, is that technology is only just catching up. There are, as I say, I cannot speak and can't and don't want to speak for all 168,000 charities. There's some really big brands in the market space of cancer researches. Even, you know, the latest CIO poll has got the guy from Anthony Nolan Trust, who's doing some great stuff with AI and data. So that doesn't mean that all charities are like this. However, a lot of charities, in my experience in the sector of IT, has been a back office function. It's a cost function. It's slightly delayed in how it thinks about and uses technology, and hamstrung by that, you know, that real challenge on we're not a tech company. Our purpose is our charitable goals. Not necessarily marrying the two pieces together, and the significant investment that it takes to shift into a tech business. But that is absolutely changing. Is it changing as fast as in the commercial sector? No.
Do you think it's because you'd have to pump a lot more money into it to actually make that step, to put a lot of investment into creating new technology to help?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's... And money is a big factor, not just because you've got to pay obviously the salaries and the tech that goes with it, but you've also got to change the culture of the organisation to put the value of that. So a lot of times IT doesn't sit at the top level. Even in early days at MenCap, you didn't have trustees that really understood technology, or if their understanding of technology, it was out of date, significantly out of date. And again, that's I'm trying not to tar the charity sector with that same brush, because there are ones that are standalone. But you're seeing that shift, and you're seeing those surviving charities, the bigger charities, using tech more. So, yeah, finance is a big factor. And there was a funny, well, it's funny now, but when I first joined the charity sector from the commercial sector, a lady once accused me of stealing the biscuits of her staff because I had put through a measure. This is it seems really trivial when I think about it. It was a measure where we built and shipped out laptops for the staff, and there was a charge that we wrapped in the cost of shipping the laptop. And I'd worked it out that it cost to get it built and shipped. The deal that I'd managed to cut at the time had been, and the turnaround time was so good, it cost about £35.
Yeah.
What it turned out had happened is that her husband had been building the laptops because he was part of the IT team, and she was personally delivering the laptops when they were built.
Right.
So by adding that £35 charge on top of a bill, I was effectively taking her business unit's tea and coffee money and biscuit money and making them pay for it.
She
said, you're taking our funds for biscuits. And I was like, well, not quite, but what it was seen as is any cost that you added from a technology perspective, albeit you might be improving the service, or you might be investing in data, or quicker turnaround time of processing of new applicants like this RPA solution. You're taking away money from frontline services. You're taking it away from that purpose, and the mindset is embedded all the way through an organization to where the value of tech is. That is definitely changing, and some are changing much faster than others, but it is a real challenge. And it isn't my view, and I obviously, Ben, you probably see things a lot broader than I do. I don't think it's just the charity sector. I think there's a lot of commercial organizations that are really struggling with this need to embed digital and technology and data into everything that they do. And those that will survive will be able to do it well, and those that don't, won't.
Yeah, and it surprises me, because a lot of the people, you see it everywhere now. It's tech is being involved in almost every new innovation you can imagine in business, even ones where you'd think would be quite slow on the uptake, like healthcare and things like that. And it's literally everywhere. So it really surprises me that the perceptions haven't kind of changed already or changed enough for IT to be not as an operational side of things, as more of a development side of things.
And that's where I think for me, I wanted to get out of just the part of the sector that I was in, which was social care. So for United Response and Maincap, it's social care. At Maincap, it was 9,000 people worked there. The vast majority of those were support workers that were out every day providing care and support for people with a learning disability. They were at the field. They're paid minimum wage, a lot of them. You know, it's a really tough job. And the margins on that are so wafer thin. It was really tough. So the purpose there was that social interaction, that contact time. And yes, there absolutely was a value in using technology. So I introduced low-code development platform from Mendix so that we could start building apps to get it on the ground. We were putting digitizing a lot of stuff that they were doing to join up because there was a reason to do it. But when I first went in there, it was, why would you introduce technology? They need to provide support. It's a human interaction. Why would you need tech? It gets in the way. So because of the low amount of money that you could invest in that space, because of that sort of high contact time, I knew that it would take quite a while for that to sort of percolate through. So I wanted to see if there's a difference. And that there is more tech, there is more difference in where I am now and in other charities, but there's still some similarities in terms of it's not front and center. It's not sitting at the heart of what the organization does. It's not woven into that fabric. So as I say, not to say that all charities are like that, and this is in my capacity as me, not talking on behalf of all charities and in particular where I work now, which is a great charity.
Yeah. So
I don't want to disparage it.
I mean, where can you see the future of charities heading? I mean, is there any kind of, I don't know, what can you see? Are we on a tipping point right now where we're going to see more tech introduced?
I think it's a very similar one to most other organizations that are still grappling with what the hell does this digital revolution mean to us. Mm. So it isn't any different in that respect. It's how they adapt and grasp it, which is down to the mindset of the leadership in the organizations, the way that they want to invest, getting the right people into the tech teams. So for me, I think that's also an interesting challenge for how you incentivize and get the best and the right people in an organization. So I think it will, I think it definitely will move in that direction. It just won't be in a uniform kind of way. And the successful ones will really capture how to do that best. I'd say that it's 168,000. You've got a massive range there from really small, almost like corner shop style charities, and that's the vast majority. And then you've got a pseudo corporate in something like cancer research, which they do have, you know, they do invest properly. They do have good data skills. They do have incubation activities that go on, and as they should. But the other interesting thing, and this is apparent with places like Maincap, is there are certain charities that get investment from the public. So there was a thing about kids, cancer, and animals. That's where the vast majority of money goes when funds are raised by the public. So hence cancer research is one of the richer ones. You've also got long-standing property-owning ones and that have been around for years that have had legacies passed on, like the Royal National Lifeboat Institute, for example, or Barnardo's. So it's back to the money side of it, of how you afford to do some of these things. So
yeah, it's interesting because essentially charity is, it's always about, is it always about revenue? Is it always about money? Is it always about the bottom line?
I think that's about any kind of commercial entity. I mean, and this is the myth, is that a charity is a form of a business. It's more of a not-for-profit. So it's not, its main goal isn't about maximizing return of revenue. Its goal is its purpose as to what the charity's been set up for. But there in no way can you run an organization of any sort these days without spending money, albeit on people. Can't always do it on volunteers. And you have to do it with technology these days. And that has been the challenge, is you can't run a business without technology anymore. Even the small organisations have to do it. And so, yes, money is always a factor for any business that needs to run, and it needs to run profitably. It's where do you put that money?
You know, you were mentioning earlier about finding the right people at the right time in their career to kind of poach them at the right time. But, you know, if you're looking for people that work in technology or want to work in technology, if you look at what's out there, there's so many like glamorous startups and other areas to work in. So how do you change the perceptions of those people to be like, come and join us, it's really good?
It's
so much competition.
There is a lot of competition, and it's really difficult because, as I say, you have to tap into a type of individual that is that isn't motivated by money alone. And when I do recruitment, I have to really stress many, many times, you don't come to work for a charity to be a top earner. Now, I think it's important that a charity pays a decent wage, a reasonable amount. So we would probably, if I had to describe it, you'd probably go mid-tier and above, but you wouldn't be top dollar. You wouldn't be fighting with your corporates or your legal firms or your investment banks. You just, it's pointless. And the motivation for those individuals is different. So that instantly rules out a strata of people that just, they don't want to do it. So you might find people that are on the career trajectory on the way up. So they're the aspiring, so that, you know, this is a chance to cut your teeth with technologies and with size of remit that you wouldn't necessarily have had where you were at. So it's a stepping stone. Again, using the football analogy, it might be, you know, a Division II player getting a chance to play in the Championship with an eye on moving into the Premiership. So it's a slight incubator style. And you can, I don't think I could argue you make more mistakes in there, but from a user based perception, they're lovely. Some of the nicest people I've ever met and worked with charities, you know, almost apologetic if they have a problem. And I'm constantly going, that's our job to fix it. It's our job to make it right for you. Don't apologize to me. So you can learn, you know, you've got people that can learn in that space. You also have people, sounds maybe slightly weird, but coming down the trajectory, that they've done those hard yards, they've done that sort of corporate life, and they want to give back. And so you've got some real talent there. The bit that is hard is it's not an easy life to work in a charity, because actually you have less resource, you have the same challenges, the same data protection laws, the same data controls laws, the same service delivery elements that you have to do, the same integration, the same pace of change of technology. This all still exists, yet you're trying to do it with less resource. So you often find that you've got smaller teams with a broader remit. And that's the other thing, is getting people that are able to think more laterally and flexibly in a team is important for me, because you don't necessarily have that silo thinking of a dedicated role to one thing. They might have to do two roles or two thirds in one and one third in the other. So that slide down back into giving back, or that part-time work. And the bit that's been really, really good for me in the COVID situation is we can now work flexibly. So actually offering that as an opportunity to work differently, compared to you've got to be in the office, you've got to do these fixed times. But a big part is just finding the right mindset and personality, not just the tech skills.
Mm. And that must be difficult because, do you have people coming in at graduate level and then mid and then senior?
Yeah, you get the whole range. I mean, the team at Mencap was pretty large, where we would get people in at an apprentice level, but equally bringing in people that are senior on the data side. That's not something that we grew our own of, but we tapped into different areas of the business because it's the other thing as well is not being precious about hiring them into the IT team is actually more matrix management where you're empowering people in different business units with those skills, which I think is a good thing anyway, where technology is starting to be not just the remit of IT. You're seeing tech demographically come through where the generational people are so used to this being in the fabric of their life. The thought of closing it all into one IT unit and owning it is slightly old school. So empowering and working with other parts of the business and providing the governance and the tools for those is another way forward. So spotting talent in other areas, basically.
Yeah, and it actually does seem incredibly beneficial if you're at the right stage in your career to join a charity because, you were saying, you do end up learning a huge amount. I mean, I imagine it's a steep learning curve, but when you leave, your breadth of knowledge will be huge.
Yeah, I think the way I've sort of described it, some of the team that I've had is, if you want to learn, if you want to work hard, you want to get involved in stuff, you want to do stuff that's broader than maybe a narrow remit, then this is the great place to learn. But as long as you want to learn and you want to develop, and some of the people that I've worked with now who've progressed, they've gone on to some really good stuff because they have learned a vast amount. So I wouldn't call it an incubator of sorts, but because of the nature of how we are as a charity, we don't have as rigid a governance around some of the technologies. So quite rightly, there's a bureaucracy and a layering and a structuring of teams. For me, I've been able to move a lot faster with making some quite bold decisions with technology and get involved in some quite interesting tech, which, having spoken to other people in different sectors, they move much slower. So interestingly for me, some of the people I've brought in are actually moving and working in technology spaces that is more advanced than, say, they would do in a corporate. And they get to play with that tech more so than they would have done in a corporate because it's less structured and they get more breadth in their role. So it's been more interesting for them. So, yeah, I think you can learn a lot.
It's really interesting. I'm just thinking, have you been in the charity sector for 10 years, did you say, or 10, 11
yeah,
years?
Just over 10 years, yeah.
So if you can think back to that time when you first took the step into this sector, yeah. I mean, is there anything that you wish you were told back then that you've learned the hard way?
That's a really good question. There's moments of don't do it. In some ways I wish I was less patient as I was to try and change some of the mindsets and less tolerant to change some of the mindsets. In others, I wish I was more patient. I came from an organization that understood the value of data. It understood the value of technology. It was a really high performing organization. And I went to one that had, I can only describe as something out of the IT crowd. It was just incredible. Piles of old equipment, a phone line that was never answered. It was a cultural shock to do it. And so that took a long time to almost promote the idea of what good could look like from a technology perspective. So I struggled quite a lot with that cultural shift. And that's probably, if I look back, that was probably the biggest lesson for me personally. But organizationally, I was more patient about that, you know, technology should be further up the agenda for people.
Mm. But is it a sector that an individual can make a really big difference, or does that purely depend on the size of the business?
I think it's no different from any other business, that the right person can make a huge difference. And I've also seen the wrong person can make the opposite effect and really damage what can happen. And I'm not going to go into that on a podcast, yeah. But I can categorically, that the human skills of technology are evident in terms of the right person can do good, the wrong person can do bad. And that's absolutely the case in a charity. And there's some really good individuals, some really smart, capable, driven individuals that I've come across that I've seen do good things with charities, good things with technology, good things with teams, and really move other people's careers on as well. And that's the same in corporates too. So, yeah, absolutely, it can make a big difference.
What's the next steps for you then, Vince? What's your future looking like? What's your career? Where do you want to go? I don't want to put you in any hot water here.
No. I'm not sure about how you feel about it, Ben, but I feel we're in the middle of a digital revolution. You know, the landscape around us is changing all the time and so rapidly. It's just a fantastic time to be involved in technology. So for me, as long as I can, sounds really sort of cheesy, but as long as I can use that technology to help deliver value for whoever I'm working with and for, I'm kind of happy. I love getting stuff done. I really like helping people, but that doesn't mean that I don't help people in a commercial environment. I had a funny conversation when I first joined United Response, where I remember I was getting quite annoyed because my then CFO boss was explaining in a polite way that I should slightly lower my expectations and standards. and I explained that if I lowered my expectations and standards, I thought that was wrong, because in the commercial world, I made my bosses millionaires. In the charity sector, I could actually save somebody's life or make a material difference to their life. So why would I have a lower standard? So I think wherever I go, as long as I'm delivering value to whatever that purpose is, and it's using tech, I find it really interesting what you can do with tech and how you can solve so many problems with it. And some of the people in it are amazing. Then as long as I've got a great team, good purpose. I can see for the next 15, 20 years, the world is still going to be spinning around in all sorts of weird ways. As if we look back over 10 years and 20 years in tech, someone did tell me there was a stat, 35 years Windows been going, and Excel I've been using for 25 years, which is just shocking when you think about it. If you think how far we've come in that time, who knows? So I'll be busy, that's sure.
Yeah, I mean, tech is genuinely like the most amazing but the most scary, like an overwhelming thing, because if you think about the future in 5 or 10 years' time, with most other things, you can kind of predict where they're going to be, like sports and stuff like that, you know. But with tech, no one has any idea.
And even this week's Economist is talking about the move of technology into the medical sector, into the science and research. The fact that we've got a vaccine in a year, incredible, that digital acceleration. It permeates every single part of every bit of our life and turning it all on its head.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, it's scary and exciting in equal measure, I think.
And also at the minute we've got AI and machine learning that's really on a tipping point, and that's equally.
Yeah, I mean, look, and a shout out again of really one of the really interesting things for me at Age UK that I came into, and I'll I want to pitch this over because it's right now, especially with COVID, it's a beautiful thing that Age UK do. There's a lot of people, older people, that are really lonely. You know, they're stuck at home and being forced to stay at home, and they've got no one to talk to. And a service that was set up before my time, called the Telephone Friendship Service, where we effectively match, a bit like a dating service.
Yeah,
we match volunteers that are prepared to have conversations with people that are old and lonely. Called Telephone Friendship Service, we join them together, and they have great conversations, and it makes a huge difference. It's just heartwarming. Now, where do I fit in? Where do my teams fit into this? Is that platform that we've got that was been built? It's a cloud platform. We've got so many volunteers and so much demand for this. We can't do enough with it. And we have a manual kind of intervention where some of the team, not my team, but in the Telephone Friendship Service team, have to check the calls. There's a safeguarding element to this. Mm. So it's more than just putting two people together. To provide this as a safe, secure, and a good service, they have to manually listen to calls. So interestingly enough, this is where we come in, is that we're now using some funds from a corporate and some a hackathon that they did a few years ago. I've got it off the shelf, and we're going to be running some of those calls through AI and some machine learning to track the sentiment that comes through those calls, so that we can target the safeguarding team's efforts rather than having to randomly go through more calls. So using the tech, using the machine learning to run through all those calls to make it more efficient so we can expand the service. Now, for me, that's brilliant. That's a great use of tech. Now, running that through those machine learning platforms is quite expensive to all the compute. So any large tech companies that want to support us on that and subsidize that, then, you know, talk to me afterwards. But it's where that sort of use of tech is blending together to do that very human thing of communicating and joining up two parties in a really sensitive and difficult time with COVID. So, yeah, I wanted to mention that because that's where, you know, charity, tech, commercial, modern use of AI, etc., it's all come together really well.
It's fascinating, isn't it? And that's just one area of... Yeah. Where that can all fit together seamlessly. It's incredible. I can't wait to see what's going to happen in the future with this space. It's really interesting.
There's loads. And a charity is different. It's that our purpose, or any charity's purpose, is not about the profit. It's about that charity's purpose. So tech can tech can help in all of them. So,
yeah. Well, thanks, Vince. You've really kind of opened my eyes up to this whole sector, and I've found it incredibly interesting. So, yeah, thanks so much for letting me pick your brains on this. And
not at all. It's a pleasure to speak to them.
Yeah, great chat.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show, give us a follow on your favourite streaming platform.